You know, what does it take to support that recurring revenue stream? Do you have tech support? Do you have CSMs? You know, what's needed to support that revenue? And then, of course, you know, another big thing is the go-to-market engine, understanding sales and marketing, how they're acquiring customers, how efficient they are. You know, of course, looking into G&A, R&D, you know, the product roadmap, et cetera.
Hi, folks. It's the Quiet Light Podcast with Joe Valley and Mark Dast. Quiet Light Brokerage is the leader in helping entrepreneurs build, buy, and sell their online businesses. Since 2007, we have helped thousands buy and sell online businesses. And now, we're putting our extensive knowledge in your earbuds with our trademark relentless honesty and a few laughs along the way.
I am not a destroyer of companies. I am a liberator of them.
And now, here's Joe and Mark.
Mark, one of the misconceptions about Quiet Light Brokerage is that some people think we do the vast majority of our transactions are e-commerce related, when in fact we've got quite a sizable SaaS component as well. And I understand you had Ben Murray from SaaS CFO on the podcast recently.
Yeah, I just recently became familiar with Ben. I was going out and taking a look at some of the people that are writing in this space and just kind of doing some research, trying to expand our network in this area. And I happened upon Ben's blog and was absolutely blown away. So Ben is a CFO, obviously, and specializes in the SaaS arena and talks a lot about the metrics that we want to be able to track in the SaaS world for better forecasting and better planning on the part of SaaS founders. So naturally, I thought, I have to have this guy on the podcast. We also sponsored a little ad in his newsletter as well to promote David's webinar. David Newell, for those of you that don't know, recently did a webinar on how to sell a SaaS business for 6, 7, or 8 figures. We're going to include those in the show notes. We'll also make sure that we advertise that in our weekly newsletter if you don't get that. Really, really well received. We've had hundreds of people attend and have had great response from that webinar. But we partnered with Ben to help promote that webinar as well. Ben, as I told you, Joe, just before this call, he knows more about SaaS than you and I will ever really know, because he lives and breathes this on a day in, day out basis. And so we talked a lot about, you know, some of the metrics to look at, how to think about some of the metrics, how to calculate some of the metrics in a way that makes sense, right? Because we know that we're supposed to be tracking some things like lifetime value, churn, and everything else. But how do you actually construct these calculations in a way that makes sense for your business, and then forecasting as well. So the topic, I'll be honest, I got a little wide ranging with my questions because I wanted to ask him every question at once, right? And it was difficult to say focus because I wanted to ask every question at once, but there's just some really cool nuggets in this podcast, including one that you and I talk about all the time, and that's cash versus accrual accounting.
Yeah, most people think about it only in terms of e-commerce, but SaaS and content, they've got to do it as well, just to get the lumps out of the P&L.
Yeah, I mean, it just comes down to this basic concept. Accounting, double entry accounting system has been around for a long time, and it's been around for a long time because it works. And so we should be making sure that we're actually paying attention to our books in the proper way and understanding what sort of insights we can pull out of this. Ben talks a lot about the need for forecasting, which is something that I'm increasingly growing aware of as being an important tool for business owners. We talk a little bit about how to do that in the SaaS world in this podcast as well. So super interesting. And I think for anyone that's interested in SaaS, both from an acquisition or an ownership standpoint, Ben's a guy to know. This is a podcast definitely to listen to.
Well, I'm looking forward to listening to it myself. Let's get to it.
All right. I have Ben Murray from the SaaSCFO.com. Ben, thank you so much for taking the time for a conversation here on SaaS businesses, CFO, and everything metric heavy. I'm really excited for this conversation.
Thanks, Mark. Great to be here.
So let's start out pretty simple and give just a quick background on yourself, what you do, and also a little bit about the blog. I found you through your blog, the SaaSCFO.com, but a little background on yourself so that our listeners know who I'm speaking with.
Sure. Yeah, my name is Ben Murray, and I've been in finance and accounting for the past 20 plus years. And my background's been airlines and software, specifically SaaS. And so I've been a SaaS CFO for about the last 8 plus years or so. And about 3.5 years ago, started a blog at the SaaSCFO.com where I just wanted to share my metrics, models, templates that I've been using and creating over the years. And, hoping that others would have, they could use those and implement, the models and metrics in their businesses right away.
Yeah. And look, there's a lot of people that write on this material, right? I've come across a lot of different blogs that kind of they become this intersection of marketing and metrics and company structure and everything else. Yours is really focused on metrics and metrics from, again, that kind of financial outlook perspective, and probably a deeper dive than I found in most other places. So I can definitely really, really appreciate what you're doing here on this blog, on the blog, and some of the information that you share. I want to start off with just kind of a big question, right? Your mm-hmm. website title is Ben's Post on SaaS Metrics and Forecasting. Pretty simple. I want to talk about that second half there and the forecasting side of it. I know a lot of business owners and even buyers who are looking at acquiring a business look at forecasts with a bit of a skeptical eye and wonder, what's the real value on them? Now, I think people that are growing businesses at a higher level tend to see the forecast and see the value in them. But I'd love to pick your brain a little bit about the value in forecasting and creating a good forecasting model and maybe what the foundations are for that. So why don't we start with that first question is, why forecast in the first place? I mean, isn't it really more wishful thinking, or is there a real science behind this?
Yeah, there's definitely a science behind it, because it really leverages your operational understanding of your business. And I really feel you can't forecast until you know where you've been, so really understanding your historical financials, all the metrics around that. And then once you have that, then you can put a pretty good forecast together. But if you don't understand your current financial state, it's going to be really hard to create a forecast. And obviously, the number one thing is cash, right? Cash is king. So if cash is tight, or you think it might be tight, you definitely need that forecast to balance resource requests versus cash balances. So that's number one. After that, say if you have decent margins, then again, it's really understanding, where your revenue is trending, your margins are trending. And, as you scale, so you don't get in trouble down the road if you hire too fast, invest too fast. So forecast, it's definitely, I'd say, part science, part a little intuition, but it's really critical, I think, in any business as you scale. And of course, just understanding your cash and then the metrics that are coming out of your forecast.
Yeah, what are some common areas that you see people running into with a lack of forecasting, right? Just kind of sticking their finger up in the air and feeling which way the wind is blowing today as they're growing, maybe a rapidly growing business. You already mentioned one, right? Hiring too fast and bringing on too much support staff, maybe anticipating more growth in the future. What are some other things that proper forecasting might be able to protect you from?
I think when you create that first financial forecast, and if you have been forecasting, it really exposes areas in your business that are kind of weak data-wise. The number one thing is like bookings, tracking your monthly bookings, whether that's MRR or ARR basis. That you need to know what new logos are coming in or new customers coming in, any expansion business, churn, downgrades. So that's sometimes exposes that tracking. To be able to put a good revenue forecast together, it all starts with your bookings patterns. So that's one thing. And then, it's just basic stuff. What's your current MRR? What are your current customer counts? How many paying customers do you have? So you can put, that revenue forecast together. And then it's just understanding where you spend. One big thing that I see with SaaS firms is that they're coding all their expenses to one big bucket. And I think once you reach, say, a million or two ARR, you really have to have a little more sophistication in your financial forecast that you're coding expenses to by department. Because without that, you really can't create any SaaS metrics from that. So you really need clarity around your expenses as well. So see that quite a bit.
Yeah. And so much of this, when I give presentations at a conference and, I get to the part where I'm talking about keeping good, clean, accurate, verifiable books, I get the sense sometimes that it gets glossed over. And I talk to a lot of entrepreneurs who say, yeah, I know my books are important. But then when you find out, are they actually managing them well? We found out that they aren't, and because it becomes sort of an afterthought to it. But what you said there at the end, I think, is so clear, right? Once you start having good numbers brought in to your business and you're starting to analyze these numbers, it brings clarity to the business as well. and being able to identify maybe the risks that are actually present in your company that you aren't seeing because you're not looking at the data. A lot of what you're saying here about forecasting, of course, requires keeping track of the numbers in the right way. And you need to start somewhere. For somebody that's maybe at the smaller end of the spectrum in a SaaS operation, say, you know, sub $1 million in revenue, what sort of recommendations do you have to make sure that the data that they're getting is A, getting input correctly and categorized correctly, and be, do you have any recommended software, any recommended systems that you would start out with?
Yeah, I wrote a post, you know, because that was a question I was getting a lot on what SaaS accounting software can you recommend? And of course, you know, when I speak with founders, 9 out of 10 times their financials are in QuickBooks. So that's kind of the ubiquitous accounting system out there. You know, and I've seen all sorts of P&Ls, but really it's good organization of your expense categories, not having too many. Sometimes you see a QuickBooks P&L and it's 50 expense categories and you've got $5 posted, you know, in February and 10 the next month, you know, just too much detail in that, where, you know, a SaaS company is really, you know, 70 to 80% employee wages, benefits, taxes, et cetera. You know, so that's the big thing, is getting all your wages classified correctly, coded by department. You know, then it comes down to travel, rent, commission. So there are big expense categories that are common within SaaS, that, you know, advertising, that you want to see those coded and classified correctly and kept track of each month, you know, so you're not getting behind and have very lumpy financials. You know, so that would be the big thing, is just a clearly categorized P&L by expense category. And then obviously the other one is just not applying proper RevRec, which, you know, you can't blame SaaS founders that save some $1 million that they're not applying proper RevRec to their revenue. But eventually you will need that, you know, in order to calculate, again, good metrics, good gross margins, and so forth.
Can you explain that last part a little bit more?
Yeah, about the RevRec?
Yes.
Yeah, so often, right, you know, with an MRR business, it's not as pronounced, you know, where you invoice monthly and recognize monthly. But with annual contracts, say quarterly, semi-annual, annual, multi-year contracts, you see a lot of SaaS companies posting that revenue right to their P&L. So, for example, a $12,000 annual contract that should be amortized and recognized over 12 months, they're posting the $12,000 in just 1 month. You know, so you see very lumpy revenue. You know, that it could be $50,000, $100,000 1 month, and it's $1,000 one, you know, the next month, and even I've seen negative in some months. And with that, you really cannot manage your SaaS business without the proper RevRec. And that could be finding a SaaS accountant or bookkeeper who is familiar with the SaaS business model. But without that, you know, you don't know your gross margins at all. You really don't know what's going on with your business kind of on a good, steady run rate basis. So again, under $1 million, I get it. Oh, you know, $1 million or $2 million in scaling, you definitely have to get to that point.
Yeah. And so in our world, again, we talk about this a lot on this podcast and pretty much every chance I get. And it's the simple difference between accrual and cash basis accounting, right? Yep. Instead of saying, oh, I just got $12,000 in on an annual contract, saying, well, I have an annual contract, which means I need to service this client for the full 12 months. And that equates out to $1,000 a month, which I'm earning as I go along with this contract. And it's kind of a foreign concept to a lot of people. But again, the importance here is not treating a P&L like a statement of cash flows only, and treating it, again, as a profit and loss statement. I would imagine then, this is something I didn't see on your site, but I'm sure you've covered it because your site is extremely comprehensive. It would make sense at that point to look at your financial statements and understand the balance sheet's going to be important in here as well. What role do you see? And let me see if I can back up. And I'm kind of all over the place right now, but I'll ask this in a very basic way. I know a lot of people are kind of scared or mystified by the balance sheet. How much emphasis do you think people should put on actually getting familiar with a statement like that? Or do you think it's more important to look at some of the other metrics instead and focus on those?
Yeah, I think, say, as a founder owner, you do need to understand the balance sheet to some extent, right? Because a SaaS balance sheet is a little different than others. One, obviously, is deferred revenue. So the example we talked about, when you invoice that $12,000, that should be posted to the balance sheet as deferred revenue, as a liability, because you have an obligation now to, say, perform or to service that customer. The second thing with the new RevRec standards, you now have to capitalize the contract costs that arise when signing contracts with customers. You know, for example, namely commissions. Now that becomes an asset on your balance sheet. So that's the second area that's different with SaaS, and that's actually new. And then, of course, capitalizing software development. You know, you can also capitalize software development once it reaches technological feasibility. And again, that's another asset on your balance sheet. Other than that, you know, SaaS balance sheets are pretty straightforward, but if you're applying the proper accounting, you definitely should see deferred revenue and probably capitalized commissions.
And I can kind of hear the collective groan from people listening, thinking, well, I thought we were going to be talking about SaaS metrics here. And here we are back in the old accounting stuff. But the stuff plays together, right? I mean, when we go into some of the other more advanced metrics that you're talking about, it depends on having those books done correctly so that you can pull out the right metrics and the right ratios that you're looking for. But let's get into some of those other metrics. And kind of a very basic question here. What do you consider, especially for companies at 1 million, maybe 5 million, 10 million, and then above, as we kind of work up the strata here, what sort of metrics would you generally say are really important for an owner or potentially an acquirer to really dial in on a SaaS business?
Yeah, I think once you're past that early stage where you really have to manage your cash flow, I mean, it's going to be your go-to-market, sales and marketing efficiency metrics, and that's something I'm constantly looking at. So it's really all, you know, it becomes a lot about the go-to-market efficiency. You know, one, are you an inbound or outbound sales engine and marketing engine? And then one metric that's a favorite of mine is cost of ARR, cost of MRR, where you're looking at your ARR or MRR bookings and comparing that against your sales and marketing expense to see how much it costs you to acquire one net new dollar of ARR or MRR. That's a big one. And there's a great survey out there, SaaS survey put out by KeyBank each year that provides those private company metrics so you can compare how you're doing against other SaaS companies who put data into that survey. So it's a great benchmarking tool. But again, there are a lot of sales and marketing efficiency metrics that, yeah, as you're scaling, you know, how efficient are you? You know, how much cash is going to be required to hit your booking plan? And then, you know, really just that balance, it comes down to that balance between bookings and sales and marketing.
Yeah, that's great. Let's talk employees. That tends to be one of the costs that seems to kind of spiral out of control with SaaS companies on occasion, right? The cost of supporting the clients can be higher and higher. You have something on the blog, which I just kind of chanced upon, which you came up with called the ROSE metric. Can you explain that a little bit?
Yeah, sure. You know, again, it kind of gets back to the concept that really a SaaS company or any software company is all about the staff, the employees, right? Because that's the major expense, or as I call them there, it's that investment in the business around your staff. And, you know, you see that, you know, revenue per FTE metric out there is kind of a general gauge around efficiency, which I think is just too high level, too generic. So I want to look at, you know, really it's so important, you know, that, you know, you're investing employees, that employees are happy because they're creating that software company, they're creating the product. And, you know, really comparing, you know, how efficient are we in headcount, wages versus the bookings coming in. So again, it gets kind of to that balance of, you know, as we scale, you know, what resources do we need to support our bookings plan, our revenue plan, and just see how efficient we are in acquiring new MRR or our ARR, you know, against our kind of employee headcount or employee wages.
Yeah, it's an interesting piece. And again, I'd recommend people take a look at the blog and kind of dig into some of these employee metrics. It's one that we don't see as much in our world. And I think it's an interesting one to take a look at. From a merger and acquisition standpoint, if you're a buyer coming into a business and trying to evaluate it, where are you going to begin looking at a company's books? What sort of numbers are you going to be looking at and trying to calculate within that first day as you're trying to see, is this a good opportunity in a healthy company?
Yeah, obviously, you know, the first thing you're going to look at is just, you know, are they good books? Are you, you know, GAAP accounting? So they're good financial statements. And then after that, you know, it's really understanding the health of the recurring revenue, right? Because a lot of valuations are based on, you know, a multiple of ARR or MRR, and then also EBITDA, you know, so really, when I look at it, you know, it's really looking into that recurring revenue, you know, so the bookings data, you know, what's, you know, gross dollar retention, net revenue retention, how many logos are you losing per month? How many dollars are you losing per month in churn and downgrades? And then, of course, if you have multiple products, it's understanding all of those metrics by the product lines. So, because that's what you're really buying is the recurring revenue stream. And of course, any profitability or lack of profitability that goes along with that recurring revenue stream in the form of EBITDA. So those are the first things that I dive into is really understanding the revenue streams. And then, you know, really the business model, you know, what does it take to support that recurring revenue stream? Do you have tech supports? Do you have CSMs? You know, what's needed to support that revenue? And then, of course, you know, another big thing is the go-to-market engine, understanding sales and marketing, how they're acquiring customers, how efficient they are. And then, you know, of course, looking into G&A, you know, R&D, you know, the product roadmap, et cetera.
Sure, absolutely. As far as dealing with a company with weak books, like if you're evaluating a company that maybe has this lumpy revenue because they're recording everything on a cash basis, are there ways that you can suggest that would not involve a whole deconstruction of books, but maybe to be able to evaluate a business that has weaker books or weaker data tracking practices?
Yeah, if you really can't rely on the financials for the revenue stream, then you have to really build it back up through their bookings data, you know, and or their invoicing data. So, you know, so getting, you know, say a couple years of invoicing history of their subscriptions, you know, so dollar amounts, start end dates, you know, it'd help if you knew if, you know, was this a new logo expansion, et cetera, so that you can reconstruct what their revenue stream should look like. And then, you know, get into back into, you know, what kind of expansion are they seeing, churn are they seeing, so you can build out that revenue stream. You know, if they're not doing it through the financial statements.
Sure. Well, what would be some warning signs that you would look for in an acquisition? Now, obviously, you said that you would really look at the health of the recurring revenue, right? How trustworthy is it? Also, what are the go-to-market costs as well? What are some things that would be just kind of a deal breaker for you if you were evaluating a business?
I mean, a couple of things would be, you know, looking at, again, I think it's going to be around churn and payback periods. You know, so payback periods are extremely important. You know, so how fast are you paying back those upfront customer acquisition costs? You know, so looking at their cash balance, of course. You know, do they have to fund working capital through lines of credit or debt? You know, that their business model isn't quite working for some reason. You know, are their payback periods too long, or they have just too much cash tied up in CAC? And then, of course, new logo acquisition, you know, do they have the go-to-market model proved out or, you know, product market fit? You know, and then again, just, you know, is churn under control? Can they acquire customers, but then can they retain them over time? So again, those are some of the things that, you know, if you see warning flags, you know, you might see some warning flags there, you know, that the metrics just as a whole don't add up together.
Right. And you mentioned payback periods. This is something that I've run into a number of times where I see, you know, somebody pretty plainly put out there, hey, my LTV is this, my CAC is this. So look, I'm going to acquire the customer for $80. The lifetime value is $400. And you're going to make a great, you know, return on your investment on that. But when you dig into it a little bit deeper, you find out that if you take like an 80% cohort, right, if you're taking a look at the majority of customers, lifetime value is much lower. There's a couple of unicorns in there that are pulling in this really high value. What are some ways that you can recommend dissecting this when you get these kind of flat up numbers of my lifetime value is X and my cost of acquisition is Y, so therefore you're going to make a killing on this business? How can you start to dissect that and actually get some better insights there?
Yeah, especially with LTV, because that can be so sensitive to the denominator or what churn number you're using in a denominator. You know, so you really have to understand what inputs they're putting into that, because that lifetime value can be all over the place. You know, so again, you mentioned cohort analysis. You know, are they cherry picking the cohorts? Are they using aggregate churn? Or are you looking at really with CAC and payback periods, you should be looking at, it's really a point in time, like the cohort analysis, that what's the most recent, you know, cohorts coming in and the paybacks on those, and also lifetime, you know, the churn from your, you know, from the cohorts, say for the past 12 months. So you really have to, I think, yeah, look at the details, you know, and the numbers that are building up into those formulas to really prove out, you know, that they're saying, you know, that they can really claim great numbers.
Yeah, it's one of the reasons that LTV to me, I'm not a big fan of that metric on its own. I mean, it's interesting, but I think it's just kind of a live number. It doesn't color a whole lot when you're looking at it by itself, right? It can really take into a lot of different factors.
Yeah. And I definitely calculate LTV. It's interesting, you know, because I think SaaS metrics in isolation don't mean much. You kind of have to look at the big picture. You know, obviously it's LTV to CAC, but also looking at cost of AR payback periods. So maybe it's one data point, but it's not telling the whole story. You know, so I do look at LTV, but again, I think say cost of ARR or the payback on that is a much easier way to understand. And that LTV, I still think is kind of a ballpark because it's always changing and it's such a sensitive calculation that it's not, you know, the number just to look at alone.
Yeah, you know, a question I get all the time from people, and it's really basic in your world, so I apologize for even asking this, but people ask me all the time, well, how am I supposed to calculate my lifetime value? How am I supposed to calculate my churn when I have people that are still, you know, that have been with me from day one, right? And these numbers sometimes can be difficult to calculate because of that, or even, you know, people that are dropping off, but then coming back on, and then dropping off again and coming back on.
Yeah, and that's, I hear that a lot too. Yeah, especially if you're a couple years in, you really don't know your lifetime value yet. You know, again, it's just a formula, it's a calculation, so it's a ballpark. But yeah, you don't really know true LTV yet if you've just been around a couple months or a couple years. And then the whole dropping off, dropping on, back on, that's where it just becomes almost company specific that you really just have to define internally what does a new customer mean? When does it really mean that they're churned? So that everyone within the company understands that. And if you're in any sort of M&A, you know, that's clearly, you know, that you're transparent with how you're actually tracking those stats.
Yeah, and I think that part right there, that point is probably the key that I think is so important, especially from an acquisition standpoint. If you're looking to acquire a SaaS company and you're just looking at the metrics on the surface, how is that seller define those metrics within their own company, and why did they set up those rules? Because, you know, with monthly churn, you can look at that in a number of different ways, right? You can calculate that number using a different approaches. The same with LTV numbers, you can use a different approaches and get different results. So why did you choose a certain method? Why did you choose a certain approach to this? And that's the color, I think, from an acquisition standpoint that starts to get really important when you're looking at any of these metrics, is understanding the why behind what data is being presented and then the rules and applying a sanity test to it, right? Are these people just picking numbers because that's what they're supposed to pick? Or are they actually looking at these and using these metrics within their company? Yeah, just a really, really good point on your side as far as understanding the metrics and where they're coming from. Moving beyond that, you know, cost of acquisition, moving beyond the lifetime value numbers, and you mentioned a few times, you know, the going to market costs as well. What are some health levels for the sustainability of ARR or MRR on a SaaS business?
You mean it's kind of as far as the balance between recurring revenue and sales and marketing expense?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. So, you know, healthy levels, you know, things that I look at, you know, and this is probably more mid-market enterprise, but usually, you know, if you can acquire your bookings for, you know, $1 net new AR for $1 of sales and marketing expense, you know, that's pretty good. You know, so again, though, there's some surveys out there that kind of give you some benchmarks, and that's kind of, you could say, in whole, both new logo and expansion. Of course, expansion and upsell should be a lot cheaper in acquisition. You know, maybe that's 30 to 50 cents of sales and marketing expense to acquire one net new dollar of ARR. You know, so there's certain ranges that you look at, and if it's higher, you just need to understand, you know, from that business why it's taking longer. You know, what's the story behind go to market? You know, is it a longer sales cycle that's impacting that? Do you have to go to RFP? So different things to really understand, you know, their business model.
That's great. I'm going to just take a quick break from some of the heavy metric discussion here because, you know, we're throwing around a lot of acronyms right now. How did you get your start in this world? You said that you had experience in the airplane industry and then also in the software industry. How did you get to be so passionate about this and kind of digging in as deep as you do?
Yeah, well, I guess one thing, you really loved forecasting, you know, financial forecasting, building Excel models. And, you know, you kind of build up that toolkit over time and, you know, just really enjoy it, really understanding the economics of businesses, and especially software is so interesting. And yeah, I did start in the airlines, which is also kind of metric intensive and very financially disciplined, you know, and kind of applied that to the SaaS area. So, you know, I just noticed, you know, out there, there are a lot of resources on SaaS, but it didn't quite, I felt, go far enough or really just give you the whole story and the template that they were using. It kind of explained it, but then you might have to go do an hour or two of work to recreate what that person did. And so I said, you know, I thought, you know, it could be a little different by just providing the exact models, the templates that I'm using, and hopefully, you know, the bits and pieces of those would be applicable to people in SaaS that they could incorporate into their business. And, you know, receive great feedback, you know, from readers, subscribers, you know, downloading templates, you know, that it's helped them out a lot, you know, founders who are trying to do their first forecast. You know, so I just wanted that kind of transparent value exchange out there. And, you know, it's just really from my kind of on the job experience as a SaaS CFO and just things I encounter every day that are pain points for me, you know, that could be pain points for others, and just help them out with maybe something with a template that I've used to solve some of those problems.
Yeah, you have all these comments on the site from people that have written into about the resources. I love the one here that says, great resources that save a lot of time and brain damage to replicate, which is very true. Again, there's just some really good stuff on here. You brought up forecasting again, so I'm going to start to bring this full circle here back to forecasting, because we talked about that, and it's a topic that I'm personally very interested in as well right now. You have a whole page here on the cash runway model. Can you explain that at a high level? Maybe we can get into it a little bit.
Yeah, definitely, because I have my SaaS financial plan out there that, you know, I live in Excel every day, that I kind of take it for granted that other people can also open up Excel and just dive right in. And for a lot of people, it's still a little too advanced to work with kind of that, you could say, advanced financial planning model. So I tried to create something very basic, and it was really inspired by a founder I talked to, said that he got some funding just with a super basic cash forecast. So I thought, well, how could I take that and just make it super simple, say for founders or non-Excel people to just start inputting. Even really, it gets to, you know, their cash invoicing, so they really could forecast their cash balance and how long that balance is going to last. You know, if they funded it and then they're looking for investment, you know, that they could say, hey, here's my cash invoicing coming up, here's my headcount, here's some other major expenses, and then just forecast their cash balance in one tab. So that was the genesis of it, just trying to really boil it down to really something basic that, you know, founders or not Excel people could hopefully use right away.
Yeah, and you have this template available on the site, and it actually answers kind of the question I was going to lead into, and that is, how does somebody get started with forecasting if they don't have the resources for a CFO like yourself? What are some basic models that they can put together to start forecasting their cash flow?
Yeah, definitely. I think really it's understanding their invoicing patterns. So, right, what is your cash coming in? You know, whether that's funding or just the invoices you're sending out to your customers or the credit card payments they're making online through your site. So that's really the first step, is just that cash in. And then it's going to be headcount. Again, headcount's the majority of an expense for a SaaS company. You know, so really, and I put in formulas to help you easily calculate and forecast that expense. You know, so whether you got one person making 50, you know, put that in the model, forecast that expense out. You know, so the second thing again is headcount, and then any other major expenses. Maybe it's rent, you know, maybe it's trade show advertising. So start kind of, it's that 80-20 rule. Start with those big expenses, start with the big invoices, you know, as a place to start to put together kind of a basic forecast.
Right. And then as with all things, you can refine that as you go along and improve it and make it more accurate. And you can look back to see how accurate was our forecasting and get the insights that you need from there and be able to really plan out what's going on. Or if you're looking for funding, obviously very useful for that as well. This has been really interesting and maybe a little bit of a scattered conversation because I want to talk about everything at once.
Sure.
that's my downfall. I've never claimed to be the greatest podcast host in the world, but there's just so much here to be able to discuss. We are up against the clock at this point, though, and so I want to give you the chance to kind of round it out. And, you know, with what you do, you obviously have a passion for a lot of this, and you've been able to help out a lot of people. What are some of the common problems or common questions that you get at the blog, and what would you say
to, you know, SaaS founders currently operating a business right now, or those that might be looking to get into this through acquisition?
Yeah, I mean, the common questions or problems that I see, really, you know, one is just, how do you calculate this stuff? How do you calculate these metrics? What are the inputs? You know, and that really comes back to just a nice clean P&L that you take the time, you know, make that investment through your bookkeeper or accountant to really set up a well-organized P&L, because that's where all the metrics emanate from. And if you don't have that, it's going to be really hard to calculate the metrics and really have that financial transparency to manage your business. You know, so really, again, it starts with your SaaS P&L, which I have a post on there on my site, kind of walking through from bookings down to income, you know, what the, you know, the major components of a SaaS P&L are. And, you know, again, it's getting good organization, good fundamentals there, and then you can build upon it. Then you can start forecasting, then you can calculate metrics. So, you know, again, starts with, I think, nicely organized SaaS P&L.
You know, I had Babak Azad on, who was with Beachbody, right? Grew that company into a $1 billion company. And he was talking a lot about the metrics that they use there. And I asked him a similar question about, how do you get started in this? You know, how can you start tracking these? And his response was just what yours is, and that is just start. You just have to start with it, right? And your advice to start with the P&L and having that set up correctly. I mean, it's what we've been preaching here at Quiet Light Brokerage for a very, very long time. Get those books in order. You want to have those books in order. It doesn't matter if you want to sell or not. As a business owner, having good financial records, it's irreplaceable. Once you get it, you will be so happy that you've had it. But it starts with how you're inputting it. I've run into bookkeepers, maybe you have as well, but I've run into bookkeepers, especially when somebody hires them remotely, who kind of don't want to do an accrual basis books because they consider it to be more difficult. But it's the proper way to do it. And as you said, all the metrics derive from there. All right, one last time, Ben, where can people find you? Yeah, where can people find you? What's the best way to contact you?
Sure, you can contact me through my site. It's thesasscfo.com. And then actually later this month, I'm launching thesassacademy.com. It's an online digital course for SaaS metrics and more. So that's coming out soon as well. But definitely my blog, you can contact me through the site.
That's fantastic. Thanks so much for coming on. I hope to have you on in the future. And in the future, I'll choose one topic and I'll stick on that for the entire topic. But thank you so much for this really good overview episode. Really appreciate it.
All right. Thanks, Mark. Thanks for having me.
Today's podcast was produced by Podcast Motor and the Quiet Light content team. If you have a suggestion for a future podcast, or if you want to guess the quote from the beginning of the show for a chance at getting a shout out on the pod, email us at podcast@quietlightbrokerage.com. Be sure to follow us on Twitter, like us on Facebook, and subscribe to our YouTube channel and this show wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week.